some of the things we've been talking about, be familiar with, make sure you get all these in your mind, and all these come into story tonight. We'll talk about them. Okay? We're 2 Samuel chapter 3 tonight. 2 Samuel 3 and 4. Got a short lesson, like I mentioned that Sunday. The first 5 or 6 verses of 2 Samuel chapter 3 list a bunch of David's sons that had been born to him. We won't go back through that list now. You can read that. Son, his mother, the son, the mother, son, the mother, all David's wives he's got now, and the list of his sons. And we'll get into some of them as we get the story unfolds. Different stories, sons come into play for different things. That's what's in the first part of Samuel 3. No real narrative, just a list of the sons. Okay, getting down to about verse 6 or 7, I've got exactly where it starts in there. Story picks up now, the narrative does. It talks about Abner's power increasing. So Ish-bosheth is the son of Saul. Abner's kind of put him up as king, if you will, over the northern part, over Israel, all except just the tribe of Judah down here. Almost like a divided kingdom at this time. But Abner's really running the show. He's the one that's got all the power, all the control. But Ish-bosheth accuses Abner of something that really stirs up a stink here. What do you accuse him of? I don't know if it's on the slide, but somebody can say it. Went into one of his concubines. Now, what does that carry with it other than the fact he just went into one of his concubines? What's the connotation behind all that? If you go into one of the king's concubines, what are you pretty much doing? You just don't do that to the king. I mean, you're taking over and that's just a no-no. Now, think with me a minute. Go way down the road. Well, not way down the road. A little ways down the road in the story, who rebels against David and actually lays with David's concubines in public? Absalom, his son does. Sure does. And that's, again, it's a very significant thing because it's when Absalom is trying to take over the throne. And by doing that, particularly publicly doing that, he's showing his authority over David that he has now gotten the throne from David. Well, it didn't work out that way, but that's what he did to show part of his power over the throne. So this thing is not just a little minor incident. Go into the king's concubines, you're going to put the king down. You take it over. Now, whether he did or not, we don't know. Abner denies it, rejects it. But where he had been supporting the puppet king, if you will, Ish-bosheth, what's it to that relationship? It's gone. Okay? It's gone. Abner's no longer going to support Ish-bosheth. Because he's now accused him of doing this. So, he tells him all the stuff he's done for him, but he says, no more. He says, I'm going, David, I'm going to take all of Israel with me. I'm going to take them to David. And it's kind of interesting what he says about it. Whose purpose is he saying he's going to fulfill in doing this? What does he say about whose intent was it all along that David have the throne? It was the Lord's. Abner said, I'm going to do for David. I'm going to give him all of Israel. But that's what the Lord intended to start with. Got an interest in him that he noted that there. So he goes to David with an offer. He said, if you covenant with me, and I will bring all of Israel to you. Well, you've got just Judah now. I'll bring it all together. This whole story is important because it's the way David gets to be king over all of Israel. Okay. David accepts Abner's offer with a condition. What's the condition? What does he want back? He wants his wife, Michal, back. And who's Michal? Saul's daughter, okay? That while David was out running, fleeing from Saul, Saul had given her to someone else. David says, oh, we're back. So he tells Abner that. He also sends that same message to Ish-bosheth. Well, Abner goes to get Michal to bring her back to David when he comes. Now think about, put yourself in the place of Michal's husband. What's he gonna think about all this? What does he do? He follows after them. I mean, wouldn't you? They'd come just rip your wife out and takes off with it. And finally Abner just tells him, go back. Send you back. He does. Leaves, he goes back, and Abner takes Michal back to David. If you look at the list of sons there, one of them is, well, no, it's not wrong. Take that back. Get that story next week. So Abner goes to see all the elders in Israel, tells them what he wants to do, going to bring all Israel together for David. Specifically mentions going and talking to the tribe of Benjamin. But why the tribe of Benjamin? Saul is from the tribe of Benjamin, therefore Ishbosheth would be from the tribe of Benjamin. So as part of that process, David is bringing Saul's house Abner is bringing Saul's house under David's control here. So it comes to 20 men. Saul has a big feast for him. David has a big feast for him. Accepts what he's trying to do for him and brings it all together. He leaves then with David's blessings. David says, yes, good deal. We made a deal here. And so Abner goes back then to make this happen. Now, who was in town? Who's out of town during all this? Joab is. Alright. Think back now. What's Joab's relationship with Abner? What's Abner done? In the story last time before? What's Abner done? He killed Joab's brother. Remember they was running, chasing him, Asahel, stuck the spear, threw him backwards. Remember that? So Abner, coming to David now, Joab's not there. Joab comes in, okay, and Murad, got a lot of spoils back, it says. He comes back and he finds that Abner's been there. Well, Abner's from the local enemy side of the house. He was still part of Israel. So what does he tell David he really came for? Abner came for what? Spy you out of the city. See you're coming in, you're going out, see what's going on here, like he's going to do a war against you. That's what Joab wars David about. He leaves David, goes out, and immediately sends for Abner to come back. So Esther's catch up with Abner, bring him back. Joab takes him aside secretly to talk to him, and does what? Kills him, okay? He kills him. Takes revenge for the death of his brother. Joab does. Revenge for the death of his brother Asahel. So now Abner's out of the picture. What's been all the strength in the northern kingdom all this time? Not Ishbosheth, but Abner. So now Abner is defected to David, number one, brought Israel to David, number two, and now he's dead. Okay? So, David hears about it. Got to back up now. What's been David's relationship with Abner in the past? What happened when David and other went into the midst of the camp of Saul and got the pitcher of water and the spear and brought it out? When David called out, he didn't call out to Saul. Who did he call out to? To Abner, for letting me come in there and get this close to the king. Abner. So, David has not had a good relationship with Abner up to this point. Because of his past chasing him and all the activity going against him, and Saul was trying to kill him. What's the difference? We'll get this a little bit in applications of it. What's the difference in what, if there is one, what's the difference in what Abner did to Asahel and what Joab did to Abner? what was in battle, okay? And battle went on like this all the time at that time. Yeah, and you know, by all means, Abner told Asahel to turn aside, don't keep following me, caution him, stop this. That was in battle. That was in war. What did Joab do? He called him aside and just murdered him. There's a difference in that. We'll see David a little later on in the application. We'll talk about that a little bit. But think about the difference between what Abner had done to Asahel versus what Joab did to Abner here. A little bit different. So David put a curse on Joab's family. If you're looking at it, what he said about it, it's pretty rough. No one from you or your father's house. Always in your father's house, some will have leprosy. Somebody be looking for food. And he did, I don't know, next four or five, I don't remember all the four or five things there. But the curse he puts on Joab's house because of this. Oh, it's just murder. It's wrong. So David's going to lead the funeral procession. Said he followed the bier, the casket, and he went out to bury Abner. It's kind of interesting though. Who can tell him to join the procession? Who did Taylor join him to the procession when they went out at his funeral there? What? Joab? Okay. Joab, come on. I want you this funeral procession. David commanded him and his men to go. So, don't know exactly how Joab felt about that, but it seems like David just said, come on, you're going type thing. Now, he didn't take any revenge specifically against Joab, other than the curse he put on the family. That was David several times. He said, he doesn't do that. We'll talk about a little bit more about repaying evil for evil. We'll go over to the application part and think about that and how David did that. All right. Anything else on chapter 3? That's kind of the story. Abner brings Israel to David to be under his kingdom, and Joab kills Abner. That's kind of the summary of chapter 3. So, going to chapter 4. Oh, we got tonight's murder. I mean, you like a good murder story? We got good murder stories tonight. So Abner's killed Joab. Now then, back to Ishbosheth. Ishbosheth's kind of afraid to raise his head up now. His protection's gone. What he did, what he accused Abner of, in the first place, and now Abner's death, that leaves him a very, very weak thing, particularly where it gets out that Abner's brought all the rest of the kingdom into David. So Ishbosheth's got trouble. But get a couple of guys here, Anna and Rechab. And they are two commanders in Ishbosheth's army. They lead raids, commands of raids as they go out. These two guys this time, they don't go out on raids. We'll get the next slide up. What do they do? In a nutshell. I've read the story, I know. Another murder story. Here we go. We jumped over a couple lessons back and read 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4. It's got an insert stuck in there. It tells about Mephibosheth, who was Jonathan's son, and being crippled when the nurse fell with him when the news came about the battle on Mount Gilboa at Jezreel. That little verse is kind of stuck in here. It doesn't really have a lot to do with the narrative of the story. They're stuck in there with his family there. But these two men, Vic and Rechab, go into the palace where Ishbosheth is, and it's noontime. It's the time for the siesta, time to rest. And he is on his bed. They go in under pretense. It says to get wheat. I don't know if it's something to eat or what it is, but go in there. And then since you go into Ishbosheth's bed, I do what? Wow, bust you off. Cut his head off. Okay. Let his cut his head off. They're going to stab him and kill him, and then they take his head off. And what are they going to do with the head? Take it to David. After all, who is Ishbosheth in relation to David here now? He's the opposing king in the north, right? What are these two guys doing? Yes, David, we've killed all your opposition. We're going to bring you the head here of Ishbosheth. Okay. So they take off to Hebron, where David's capital is, and bring his head in there. Now, if you had killed the king's number one enemy, what would you expect? Reward, praise out of it, okay? Now, let's just stop a minute and think back a little bit. So David's going to remind us of something. When that Amalekite came with word about the battle where Saul and Jonathan had been killed, and he claimed he had killed Saul, what did he expect to get from David? Reward, right? What did he get? He got executed, all right? Keep that back in the back of your mind. Because David reminds these two guys of that exact same thing. He says, this Amalekite made a mistake. He'd come in and tell me he had killed King Saul, thinking he had done me some great favor. I have my young men execute him because of that. And since he says, guess what, guys? That's exactly what's going to happen to you. You have killed an innocent man. Ishbosheth had done nothing. Lying on his bed. They had a new siesta. They went there and killed him and cut his head off. No battle, no war. They expected reward from David, and they didn't get it. So you have taken the life of an innocent man, and he had them killed. It's kind of interesting what they had done to him. He had their hands and feet cut off. Not sure what that symbolizes. Had hands and feet cut off, and had their bodies publicly hanged up with their hands and feet cut off. Like Ishbosheth's head, which they had brought to him, and buried it in the tomb of Abner. And that's a little short 12 verse, chapter 4. Okay, that's kind of all the narrative we got tonight. Anybody got comments? You got Abner bringing the kingdom into David, Joab killing Abner, and you got these two commanders and Ishbosheth's army went in and killing him and bring the head to David, and he kills them. Death, 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 death tonight. Yeah. Jonathan's son was just there, but he was crippled and whatever. Saul's house is essentially like God said. Look, he's wiped him out. Your lineage will not continue. There's going to be no throne for you. Nothing like that. I'm giving it all over to David. This is the unfolding of what God told him way back, really in chapter 13, 1 Samuel 1, when he offered the sacrifice he wasn't supposed to. And then really in chapter 15, when he didn't go and wipe out the Amalekites. So all of that is now being fulfilled over here now with this. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's another point that you want me to think of there too. What I'm saying is that David took no revenge for that. That was not his intent to have him killed. He didn't eat. They tried to get him to eat. So I won't eat till they're going down the sun. But there's another point there, if I remember right, Al looking there. Didn't it say that what he did pleased the people? It pleased the people, and the very next phrase is, as did everything the king did. So the people now are coming, are following David, who I might say lock, stock, and barrel. Okay? The point is made, I'm glad you brought that up, made me think about that second point. Everything David's doing, the people are looking at what? Favorably. That's, I think, a pretty significant point. I've forgotten that. Glad you mentioned that. Okay. So slide in here that I think, I don't know how many of you are teaching next time or any time down the road before that goes. The slide that was in here that is worth us taking just a minute to think about. Why do we take time in these classes and in all of our children's classes back here? Why do we take time either as we go through the story or at the end to think about these applications? Why is that? The narrative's important. We're trying to learn the narrative. But why do we keep talking about these applications? What do these verses on the screen up here say? Did that ring a bell to you? We need to go back and see what he did. And I think some of these verses say, things that happen to them happen for an example for us. Okay. 2 Timothy 3:16, all scripture is profitable and valuable to us. And what it, Matthew 22 is really the one that's worth looking at. Mike, flip over there and read it, just Matthew 22, 29 to 32 there. And listen to what Jesus said when he was talking to some people about this. One little phrase in here that's important, and we all are reading it, it's sinking into us. Okay, topic here is entirely different. It's about marriage. Really, marriage and the resurrection. But look at where Jesus told them. You are wrong. Why? Well, you know what the scriptures say. You ought to know that. In their particular case, the Old Testament, because that's what they were applying their lives to, that's what lived under them. You err not knowing the scriptures. You ought to know what it says, and then I'm going to have to tell you what it says. You know what God, what the His plan was for the resurrection, if you had known that. So that's a point that's very valid for us. We need to know the scriptures. Something comes up, conversation, we need to know whether it's right or wrong. We need to understand that. So that's why we take time here to say, okay, here's a lesson for us. We need to be better people and learn from this stuff. And particularly to you who teach in these younger classes, high school down. Yes, we want to know the narrative. Please take time to teach some lessons to them as you go through here. Yes. What God told him about. Yeah. Good point. Jesus says, this is what God said. What he quoted from was what Moses had written, which is put all together says what Moses wrote is what God said and write. Yes. All right. Here's a lesson we need, most all of us. Galatians 6, 7 and 8. Adam, you gonna find that? Galatians 6, 7 and 8. What we're gonna talk about here is sowing and reaping. And we're going to pick it up by these two guys that went in and killed Ishbosheth. And Galatians 6, 7, and 8 is New Testament time, not Old Testament. Not where we are there. Read Galatians 6, 7, and 8. Okay, these are verses we know. I'm telling we think about them, I don't know. But we're going to reap what we sow. You sow the flesh, we'll reap the flesh. You sow the spirit, you'll reap the spirit. Now, look at these to go with it now. But you got Psalm 7 right there, right quick. And somebody else. Go find it, Esther 9, if you would. Psalm 7, Rob. Psalm 7, 14 through 16. Listen to what the psalmist says about the wicked. What they're going to reap.
For the wicked brings forth iniquity. Yes, he conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. He made a pit and dug it out and has fallen into the ditch which he made. His trouble shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down on his own crown.
Okay. What's the wicked going to do? They're going to dig a ditch and fall in it. All the connivance, they lie. What's he going to really get? Them. Okay. Us. If we do this kind of stuff. Doug? The passage here from Esther. Remember that, Haman is trying to kill all the Jews. Remember that story? And he builds a gallows then to hang Mordecai on. And it comes to this part of the story. And what happens, Doug? Okay, build a gallows, hang your enemy on. Who winds up on the gallows? You do. This goes back exactly what sowing what you're reaping. Go back to what Psalm says. You dig the pit, you're gonna fall in it. Now, how does that fit to us? Start conniving, we start doing things wrong, start sowing the flesh. What are we gonna reap? Fleshly things. Unless we all let's sink in here. Now, you say, well, that's not always true. People don't always get what come into them in this life. Well, this takes care of it. Let's let Thessalonians 1 say, who's going to take vengeance the day of judgment? God's going to take care of it. And several times we see David, we already talked about that. David, like Albert pointed this out, David not taking vengeance, leaving it to God to take care of it. The whole purpose of this slide here is to sow the flesh, we're going to reap the flesh. So look around and you say, I don't see other folks doing that. They get in the way of things like that. Well, be concerned about me. Because who's going to take care of the rest of it? God will. Don't worry about it. Okay. Obadiah 15 basically says the same thing we're talking about here. Another passage in the Old Testament. Your reward's going to come right back on your head. What if you do? Well, you sow it, what you going to get? We need to learn that. We teach our kids that. Sometimes we forget it. All right. These next two slides don't have any scriptures on them. Let's just think about what's up here. If you have a comment, I'd love to hear about this. This human life is always valued. Now think about this in relation to David. Well, before and after becoming king, David showed he valued human life. That come in our story tonight? Sure it did. Abner got killed. David mourned. Ishbosheth got killed. David took care of the guys who did it. Okay, so David valued. Now, was David a man of war? Sure he was. Different circumstance. That day and time, it was war. God had told him to go in and clean up the land, wipe it out. Told him to go wipe out the Amalekites. Different setting what we're in now. But David valued human life. Others tried to convince David, some were his enemies. David wouldn't take adventures back on. 21 times, Saul tried to kill him. David didn't go back and try to kill Saul. So, his point is there that life is precious to God. And David, even though he's a man of war, he recognized that. Abner killed Asahel and Baal is one thing. Joab murdered Abner is something entirely different. Okay, one more slide. And this, again, comes back down to me and you. We can be a good person, even though we got some bad folks around us. Maybe your work environment, whatever. Call letting your light shine, right? How does that apply to David? What kind of people came to David to be his men to start with here? In a lot of cases, it's kind of the scum of the earth, with a term we might use today, right? Not the kind of people you want around. When they try to get David to do several times, bad stuff. Give him bad advice. Kill Saul. Give him out. He's your enemy. Wipe him out. Even though David was surrounded by some bad, bad people, particularly down in his early days here. Their principles were not what David was. And think about, as we go through this whole life of David here, what's eventually said about David? And after God's own heart. Okay. Did David make mistakes? Yeah. Am I going to make mistakes? Yeah. Can I be a man after God's own heart? I can. I can. I need to live in a wicked world around me. I let my light shine. I'm the kind of person I need to be. I make mistakes. I'll do. What's my intent? What's my purpose? What I started for, Mike? Get me out here. We're going to read, exactly how far it is. David's men, this select crew that he's got, referred to as David's mighty men. In fact, when we get over to the story of Bathsheba, Uriah, her husband, you realize that he's one of those listed as mighty men? Uriah was one of David's mighty men that David actually had killed? Come on, David. David's not always does what's right. I mean, he's done some things probably worse than most of us think about doing from that standpoint. Most of us haven't gone out and killed anybody or had them killed. But David came back. David put it behind him. David repented. David wrote Psalms 51. Then my heart. First my heart. Maybe what you want me to be. We'll keep that in mind. You're a lot better people. I can get there. Right. Read that last verse again. This goes right back to what we made earlier about reading God's Word and knowing it. And while we read the Old Testament and while we study all this stuff. Okay. I know we ran into the video now, but it's got a little spare time talking about this stuff. Okay. We've got 3 minutes left. Anybody else got a thought about this? Next time, we got chapter 4, 2 Samuel chapter, no, excuse 5, 2 Samuel chapter 5. But if you look at the little sheet, we'll go to 1 Chronicles and get, I think it's 11, 12, and 14, if I remember right, the three chapters. So we got one chapter in 2 Samuel. Don't forget to jump over to 1 Chronicles and read the parallel. 1 Chronicles 11, 12, I think it's 11, 12, and 14. Look on your sheet, we pass out. So you got four chapters you need to read, way down. Sunday a couple of times if you would. Okay? All right. You get 2 minutes free tonight.